welcome into another episode of A Must-Win Game with Maggie Gray. We're coming off a big sports weekend, so I've got some takes for you. A little stock up, stock down. Let's get right into it. Stock up, big events we can all get into over the summer. And I understand that the World Cup can be tough for diehard soccer fans because all of a sudden a bunch of us casual soccer fans jump onto the bandwagon and I think they feel sort of territorial about it. But these are always super fun events, whether it's the Olympics, which people love to hate on, but then we all get into the storylines, or now the World Cup. Obviously, Spain wins this time. They prevent Argentina from going back to back. Messi, though, adds another chapter to his legacy. There was nothing bad that came of this World Cup outside of the United States really disappointing everyone once they had all of our attention. But there's one thing I'd love to add to our culture of sports. And I know it's not possible for all sports like football, both the NFL and college, because it's just too dangerous. But one thing this World Cup has really taught me is the value of a third place game, of a consolation round, because obviously you can see the World Cup, the final, the championship, everyone is super tight. Players are tight. It's a championship. Everything's on the line. They've waited their whole lives for this. And championships are just really tricky. The third place game, though, is bananas. You're not sure who's starting. Half the guys seem like they had the South Beach flu because they were in Miami. The game is like, you know, watching someone play Grand Theft Auto. I loved the fact that there was all that chaos in the third place game. And I understand that's not normal, but I think we should be bringing a third place game into things that are our culture. NCAA tournament, both men's and women's side. Like, why aren't we? Let's do a third place game. I think there's other sports we can do this in. You're telling me we can't get a third place game in baseball? It would be phenomenal. You don't even have to start your best pitchers. All right, if guys are injured, they don't play. But, like, let's get nuts here. We are depriving ourselves as a sports culture of something that is thoroughly entertaining. And if you throw a little bit more money to the players, I think they'd absolutely be into it. Again, NFL, college football, they already play so many games. Their brains are getting bashed in. Their bones are broken. I'm not advocating. Same with hockey. It can be way too dangerous to have more games. By the end, guys are like practically in body bags. We always find out after the Stanley Cup final, guys have been playing on broken legs, broken arms, broken everything. Enough of the collision sports. Collision sports, no. Some of the contact sports, though, I don't know. Maybe we can find a way to have a third place game. I absolutely loved it. So stock up for big summer events like the World Cup that gets everybody's attention. It made the summer way more interesting and gave us all something to watch. So whether you hate on bandwagon soccer fans, people like me, casuals who come in and suddenly have opinions on stuff, get over it. It's really fun. And this World Cup certainly delivered on our home soil. Okay, next stock up. I'm going to go stock up to Bryson DeChambeau as a great golf villain. He got a two-stroke penalty over the weekend at the Open Championship. This was actually on Friday. Two strokes. He was in second place. It knocked him down the leaderboard. He was on the fifth hole, and it's because he was kind of obviously tamping down the fescue and the high grass at Royal Birkdale and trying to get, presumably, like a better, more advantageous lane on his backswing. So he got dinged for it, and he argued about it with the rules official for enough time that other golfers behind him got delayed. So obviously, Rory McIlroy hated this. Other golfers hated this. People generally on the tour seem to not like Bryson DeChambeau very much. He's got a lot of look at me. He's got the YouTube channel. He went over to Live Golf. So that automatically sort of puts you more in the villain category. But he's like a villain that seems almost more like a troll. You know, golf has had some pretty serious stories with some of its biggest stars. You know, Tiger Woods constantly battling, whether it's painkiller addiction. It was sex addiction. It was this fall from grace. And we still love him. We still watch him. But he has so much that's just kind of a downer to talk about. I mean, real things for him, but just nothing that would make him a villain, but just things that are sticky, tricky topics. Phil Mickelson, a gambling addict. Story after story dropping about Phil and how much he's gambling and how he's deceiving his wife. I mean, Tiger also had the infidelity, but, you know, just how much these lengths that he'll go to, getting asked not to return to certain golf clubs. You know, all this stuff is just so heavy. It's just so not cool what guys like Phil Mickelson, with Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger's been in so many car accidents. He's lucky he hasn't been killed, or he hasn't killed somebody else. I mean, driving totally blitzed out of his mind on God knows what. Bryson DeChambeau is not that. At least as far as we know, he is not that. This is a more like a golf troll. And I think he's perfect for this because he kind of loves being the golf troll. He's okay wearing the black hat. Scottie Scheffler, I don't think this would fit him. You know, Scottie Scheffler is more of a face. Rory McIlroy, more of a face, if we're using wrestling terms. They wouldn't want to be the villain. It wouldn't fit. The fact that DeChambeau will play the villain and the fact that he revels in it is great for golf. Anyway, he ends up tied for 14th at the end of the Open Championship, finished with a 4-under, again, at Royal Birkdale, and he made fun of himself for the 2-stroke penalty that he so vehemently fought against, and by the way, like, threatened to not finish the tournament because of this, which was a little petulant, but again, he's the villain, so he can do this silly stuff. He ends up being, you know, getting the headlines. Ryan Fox won the tournament, by the way, I should point that out. Amazing down the backstretch. He wins the tournament. Guy was just nails, but I love Bryson DeChambeau as the willing villain. Okay, got to go stock down here, and this is for the two young Giants stars who have really had stupid off seasons. If getting through the off season was just an IQ test, I think both of them are really trending in the wrong direction, and I'm talking about Cam Scataboo and Jackson Dart. We'll start with Cam Scataboo over the weekend at Fanatics Fest here in New York City. He's obviously coming off of the ankle injury. He only played in 8 games last year. The guy's a human battering ram. So obviously, you know, he's going to have injuries. This one was significant, ended his season. He's on stage at Fanatics Fest, pulls up the pant leg to sort of show the crowd, hey, I'm totally healed. But that's not enough. Scataboo then attempts a standing backflip. Did not nail the dismount. Falls back on his butt. Pops back up like he meant to do that. And now looks like a fool. And listen, I don't think anyone thought Cam Scataboo was the sharpest knife in the drawer. But this is somebody who needs to get to a second contract. And I'm not sure if he's going to get there. Late round pick, obviously amazing career at Arizona State. We'll all remember the incredible game against Texas in the college football playoff. It was just unreal. But it seems like this is going two ways. Either he's going to be some type of version of Rob Gronkowski, the sort of meathead caveman guy. Although Rob always had a little twinkle in the eye. Like, we were always told Gronkowski's a little smarter than he appears, but he kind of plays the dumb jock thing. And it's worked out to perfection. Gronk is also a Hall of Famer. He's also maybe the greatest tight end that's ever played in the NFL. So he's got that going for him. Cam Scataboo is not that. He is not going to be a future Hall of Fame running back because there's no chance that this guy's going to be able to stay healthy enough. So then do the dumb backflip. You've just now created something that people will point to say he's not taking it seriously. Now in steps Jackson Dart. He is the quarterback and first round pick of this franchise. And he's on a boat, on a yacht somewhere. You got friends on a jet ski. He throws a football, to be fair, a dime, to the guy on the jet ski who catches it as he's falling off, kind of like a dude perfect sort of thing. And then Jackson Dart is so impressed with himself that he jumps off the yacht. Now, here's the thing. It's not smart. No one's saying you can't have a good time. No one's telling you not to be on the yacht. Do you have to jump off it? And even if you do, do you have to post it? And listen, quarterbacks are held to a much higher standard. And people already think that he's a little bit of a knucklehead because of the way he plays. It's reckless. He has not learned yet how to protect himself. But you've got to show that you are going to be serious in the offseason. And no one is saying you have to be in a film room 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you got to be smart enough not to post that stupid stuff. Because I don't see Cam Ward posting it. And I don't see Travis Hunter posting it. And I don't see your teammate Abdul Carter posting it. And these are all guys who were taken before you. And hell, I don't see Shedeur Sanders posting it. Not stuff like that. And so I think that, you know, Jackson Dart has this sort of I'm the man persona, which is great. Everyone wants their quarterback to be over the top with confidence. But A, you haven't played a lot of football. And B, the last two headlines that I've really gotten from Jackson Dart have been him jumping off the boat. And then him making an appearance at a political thing. It's like these have nothing to do with football. I don't care your beliefs. I'm just saying he walked into something that was pretty volatile. Like you'd have to have your head in the sand not to know that it's a polarizing president here. So you're going to make half the people happy and you're going to make half the people mad. I mean, do you? But you got to know that that is going to bring some backlash. So for me, Jackson Dart, Cam Scadaboo, two young stars for the New York Giants, not having a great summer. And the jokes were going around on social media. Oh, John Harbaugh, he's going to have to yell at Cam and he's going to have to yell at Jackson Dart. This is not what you want. The Giants have to start being legitimate here. Enough with the losing. They are a joke. And if you want to get out of the basement, in a very tough NFC East, Eagles aren't going anywhere. Let's see what Washington does after they retooled this offseason. Let's see what the Cowboys do after missing the playoffs last year. You know, somebody's got to lead this team out of the basement. While we're talking about Fanatics Fest, where Cam Scadaboo did that backflip, Tom Brady, yikes. Tom Brady at Fanatics Fest. Now, this is the third year he's been there. He's obviously super tight with Michael Rubin, the founder of Fanatics Fest. I'm sure he's got a cut, I would imagine, of that business. And he's got his cards everywhere, the Tom Brady card vault. I was there. I saw it all. Tom Brady now doing a WWE turn. Tom, I know a lot of very famous and cool people have taken a turn through WWE. I've been a guest of theirs at many events. This is not anti-WWE. This is Tom Brady. Why can't you say no to anything? Like, if he's saying yes to all this, what is he saying no to? You know, Tom, to me, was always known as a guy who gave back money, like who didn't, not gave back money, never took the maximum that he could have taken when he was at the Patriots. Super team friendly. Also was married to the most successful supermodel of all time. And it feels like Tom's playing catch up here on all the money that he didn't take, I guess. And it's almost like he's clawing all of that back. One appearance at a time. The worst is when Tom Brady, synonymous with healthy eating, healthy food, you know, always keeping your body in great shape, TB12 method and all his, you know, like playing forever and his body shilling for Pizza Hut. Like the same guy who told people not to eat tomatoes because they're a nightshade vegetable cannot then turn to one of the bigger fast food chains in this country. Inauthentic. And Tom is a terrible actor. We found that out from the WWE, the promo that he cut with Jake Paul where he pretends, you know, to slap Jake Paul in the face. In the Undertaker's casket, the bell tolls, Tom sits up like the Undertaker. But it can't be a comeback because Tom never left. Tom has been in our lives more now than when he was the quarterback for the Patriots or the Bucks. How is that possible? I just think he's either grabbing every dollar or is he worried about his legacy? Like, does he see that Joe Montana maybe kind of faded a little bit to the back with the younger generation, and he's trying to make sure his legacy stays intact. Maybe I'm overthinking it. He's not thinking about any of that stuff. He's just out there living his life. But like, there is a certain bit that you have to hold back of yourself from the public, in my opinion. Michael Jordan does it. Wayne Gretzky does it. Messi does it. I think the great ones, you have to be a little removed, because people are not expecting you to be so ubiquitous. Like, you shouldn't be this available. You're not a politician. You're the former greatest football player that we had. You're universally the GOAT. And I think it really started with the roast of Tom Brady. I mean, clearly he did not think that through. You know, it's cool to be self-deprecating. It's cool to be this famous and this great and also be the butt of the joke. But he didn't think it through about how much these comics were going to go after his ex-wife, the mother of 2 out of 3 of his kids. And they were merciless towards her. And Tom admitted it affected his kids. So I don't know what Tom Brady's post-career strategy here is, like post-retirement strategy. Obviously Fox, which he's still not even a great broadcaster, even though he's being paid all this money. He's improved, but good grief, I'd hope so. He's been doing it for 2 years. He called a Super Bowl. He needs to get much better at that if he actually wants to keep doing it. And it's like, Tom, why are you around so much? And what's up with these choices? Because whoever's telling you that you did a good job at WWE is lying to you. Lying. And people are just being nice because you're Tom Brady. Okay, I got to give another stock down to another superstar, but this one has a caveat. It's based off of one news report. So if this report ends up being wrong, then I would like to be able to retract my stock down. But it goes to LeBron James. Now, the report was that LeBron is waiting until after the World Cup final, and I guess after Summer League, which ends on July 19th, to announce where he's going to go as a free agent. As if LeBron needs a clearing in the sports calendar to get attention on where he's going to go. I don't know why this free agency for LeBron feels so desperate to me. I've talked about this before. Rich Paul on the podcast with a whiteboard outlining all the places LeBron will go or could go and why, some like a pros and cons list on each. This to me felt extremely unserious. It felt like content for a show, not the future of his clearly most important client. And I don't understand why LeBron, knowing all that he knows, would think that this would get no attention or feels like he needs it to make this much attention and be this attention grabbing. When you're also saying, I'm willing to take very little money and I realize I'm not going to be the number one option. Can't have it both ways. Are you going to fit in or are you going to make it all about you? And this is what leads to a lot of LeBron backlash, because people accuse him of making it all about him. And listen, when you're the greatest player of the generation, then it can be about you. But now at 41, 42 years old, you are clearly not going to be the first option. LeBron's still playing great, by the way, but not going to be the first option. So why are we drawing out the free agency? And oh, by the way, the three teams it's reportedly down to are Cleveland, Miami, the 76ers, and I guess the Warriors. We'll call it 3.5 teams. The Warriors are still lurking out there as well. If LeBron ends up signing anywhere else but Cleveland, why did you do this yet again to the Cleveland faithful? The people who were so devastated by the decision, who turned on you, who you had to go back to Cleveland and win them one of the most improbable titles in the history of the NBA, where no team had come back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals, and you had to literally make history to get them back on your side. Why would you do this again? Why would you draw it out and make them have hope that you could be the guy to come and put this Cleveland Cavaliers team over the top, because obviously they need help? Because Donovan Mitchell, and now with James Harden and Kenny Atkinson and Jared Allen, they, you know, Evan Mobley, they can't get it done in the playoffs. but toying again with the Cleveland fans seems almost mean just because, and again, this is only one report, because you want to have the sports calendar to yourself. Stock down. Stock down on this free agency. The last time LeBron was a free agent, he decided to go from Cleveland to the LA Lakers. And you know what? He did it with a press release. It doesn't have to be that complicated. And I don't understand really why they're maximizing this, or it appears they want to maximize this for ultimate impact. You've already had one of the greatest careers in the history of sports, period. Why do we need the extra razzle dazzle on top of it? Last one I'm going to do, it's a stock up. It's a stock up on something that, I'll be honest, I know exists. I know it's a major hobby for a lot of people out there. I did not realize to the extent, and I got to give it to the card collectors. It's not my bag, baby, but I saw what you guys were up to at Fanatics Fest. I saw the amount of people who were just going table to table to table. Half of it was card collectors and memorabilia people. Everything from a Honus Wagner card for $13 million to Babe Ruth, a copy of a Babe Ruth card, to Victor Wembanyama and a Tom Brady card. Obviously, Michael Jordan stuff. One card was Vince McMahon signed card for nearly $18,000. Someone had a whole row of Rob Gronkowski cards that spelled out Gronkowski. Every single letter was a different card. G-R-O-N-K-O-W. You get the point. He was selling that for $4,000. I did a video. I put it up on my Instagram and on Twitter. It's the most expensive cards that I could find from every table. Again, card collectors, I was not familiar with your game. So I will give a stock up because, listen, you guys are out there having a great time. You're loving it. Everyone at Fanatics Fest seemed like they were having a ball. I mean, it's fun to be in the room and you can watch celebrities and athletes and stuff walk by. Very, very cool. Seemed like young kids were loving it. For all the dads who brought their sons and daughters out there, again, everyone seemed like they were having an absolute blast. So kudos to Fanatics Fest and kudos to the card collectors, because you guys make that convention go. That thing is for card collectors. Okay, this one is going to be a stock down, guys, and I hope it's not a stock down for very long. Stock down on Shohei Ohtani being a two-way player. No, I love the fact that he is so committed to being a pitcher, but because of this knee injury that he's been dealing with, that he needed a lubricant injection into the knee over the All-Star break, which is why he was not in Philly for the All-Star break. Shohei Ohtani now shut down indefinitely from pitching. Dave Roberts, talking to the media on Sunday, said they have no timetable for a return. Now, how this becomes a stock up again is obviously if Ohtani pitches in the postseason, because the Dodgers are well on their way to another defense of the two World Series that they've won in a row. The Dodgers are on the doorstep of a dynasty. They obviously need to get that third one. This is so important that Shohei Ohtani is ready to pitch in October. That's all that matters here. So put him on the shelf for now. He had a sub-2 ERA, by the way, and he had made 14 starts. His last start was on July 3rd. He's not been hitting on the days he was pitching. They were giving him extra days off in between starts. So obviously they were doing whatever they could to keep him healthy. Still didn't work. But as long as that knee is ready to go by the postseason, this is not going to matter. And the coolest thing about Shohei Ohtani is that, you know, he's willing to do whatever it takes. Two, when it comes to the postseason, I think he will pitch through it. Now, how much does that hurt him at the plate? I don't know, but with the history of the Dodgers and all of the injuries that have happened to their pitching staff and all the times that has sidelined them in their quest for a World Series championship, I cannot imagine that Shohei Ohtani would not use this time wisely, try to work on the mechanics behind the scenes, see if he can take any of the weight off of that knee and get himself healthy enough to pitch in the postseason. So I'm not giving up hope that he will continue to be a two-way star. It may just become more and more limited to where he's only ramping up for the postseason. But as of now, shut down from pitching. So we got to go stock down on Ohtani being a two-way star. All right, guys, that's going to do it for me. Thank you for listening to another episode of A Must Win Game. If you can, please hit that subscribe button. It's a very small thing you can do, and it helps me out tremendously. Enjoy it. I'll be back later this week with another episode.